Good morning again. This is Hollis Walker sitting in for Mary Charlotte on the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My next guest is Terry Wilson, author of a new book, Confessions of a Failed Saint. But before we get going, I want to mention that we have the KSFR book and music sale taking place this weekend, August 2nd and 3rd, Friday and Saturday. We have, check it out, 7,000 plus books, more than 3,000 CDs, more than 2,000 LPs. Those are albums, vinyl, for you young people who haven't seen them before. And we have hundreds of DVDs, and everything has to get sold. The sale will be at the Community College Fitness Center Friday from 1 to 6 p.m., $10 admission, free with a Santa Fe Community College ID, and Saturday, 9 a.m. to noon, and 1 to 3 p.m. The latter part of Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. will be a bag sale, so the deals will be great. Be sure to stop by. All proceeds benefit KSFR.com, I was going to say. It benefits the radio station. Anyway, so please come to our book and music sale. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
It's so good to see you. Terry, this is a funny morning for me. My previous guest, Nazario Garcia, and I worked for him. He was my boss at New Mexico Highlands University in 1991 to 93.
Wow.
And now, sitting in front of me is Terry Wilson, and I'm not even sure how far back we go. We were in a writing group together at one point. We've just
exactly.
known each other a very
and we
long
did a
time.
Performance together.
We did.
September 11th, the Santa Fe Stories.
Yeah, the monologues. I had completely forgotten that until you mentioned it the other day. And so I was really excited when I saw Terry's book, Confessions of a Failed Saint, because some of these stories I recognize. You were working on them long, long ago. Terry, I want to, before I forget, I want to make sure I say that she's going to do a reading from her book at 6 p.m. Friday. That's this Friday, August 2nd, at Collected Works downtown. And Terry has, you know, she's preceded by quite a reputation. She's been in Santa Fe a long time. She's not just a writer, she's also a stand-up comedian, and she teaches creative writing at the community college.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, how long have you been working on this book?
Well, I could always say my whole life, I suppose, but generally I've been writing essays my whole life. My whole family are storytellers, and so am I. So the challenge is to decide which essays go into the book. So in the last few years, that process has happened. I've had some help, and it's been actually really fun to put those together. And also a little scary, because certain members of my family might not, well, don't like some of the book.
So the book is, as Terry said, it's a series of essays, and it ranges from childhood memories to very recent experiences. Like there's one about your marriage, your finding and meeting your Mark, your mate.
Exactly.
And
whose name is Mark?
Yeah. Actually, I meant that. You're very clever, you know. That was funny. She's good at this. Anyway, I've always been taken so much by your recollections of growing up Catholic. Tell the listeners just how seriously Catholic your family was.
We pretty much had saints on every wall. And the saints, as I say in one of my chapters, we were more interested in their deaths, it seemed like, than their lives. At least I was, because I liked sort of the gory details of swords, the chest, and appendix getting ripped out. And St. Elmo had his appendix torn out, and he is now the patron saint of appendicitis, which I think is kind of important in some strange, sick way. So anyway, my family are all still very Catholic.
And you're Irish Catholic, right?
Yes.
I always thought you were Italian because you had dark hair, but you're an Irish Catholic girl.
Irish Catholic, sort of black Irish. Uh-huh. Yes. So, yeah, my family still goes to church. And I don't really put down Catholicism in this book. I'm always careful to say that because I think that, well, my favorite parts of Catholicism are some of the rituals, some of the churches, and just the fact that they care about other people. Some Catholics, anyway.
Right, and the charitable workings of the church and individuals within the church. That's very
exactly.
much instilled in one as a Catholic.
Right, exactly. Uh-huh. So I thank my mom for some of the big-heartedness I've had in my life when I've had it, because that's how she is. She's still alive. She's 95.
I want you to read something from the book.
Okay.
So I've taken this very first essay here, and I've kind of edited it. I've marked it for you so you can read that this part, if that's okay with you.
You want to make it a little shorter.
Yeah, okay, so just take off there, Terry.
Okay, here we go. Putting on the reading glasses. Okay. So
this one's called Becoming a Nun, Leper, or Saint. It's the first essay in her book.
Right. Okay. When I was growing up, the one thing I knew would make my mom feel better was if I became a nun. If only one of my kids would become a religious, she'd say, and I took it on as my job. I have 5 brothers and sisters, and I'm the second youngest, the middle girl in the family. My older and younger sisters were way more perfect, but I was the one who needed to be sure my mom loved me. My mother's sister was a nun, and sometimes we'd go and visit her at the convent where she lived. As soon as we walked into those hushed corridors with nuns scurrying around, my mother would say, "Now look how nice their skin is. They really feed them well here." Then, at some point, we'd end up in my aunt's room, a little cell with a hard, skinny twin bed and a pinewood dresser. And while my aunt was finishing up her prayers, my mom would whisper to me, "This cell is really nice. You could have your own little cell if you lived here. Look how clean it is." These trips to the convent were not convincing, but it was hard growing up Catholic. You could never get Jesus off the cross, for one thing. I needed clear signs to figure out whether I was a good person or not. But each day, each day in school, there he was, still hanging in front of us, still bloody. "Your sins put him on the cross," all the nuns and priests would tell us. Even when I knelt for 3 hours in church every Good Friday, even when I dragged myself out of bed and trudged to Mass in the snow on days I could have slept in, my parents said I was contrary. In 4th grade, I wrote in the 3-page autobiography we were assigned in class that I wanted to become a nun, but it was mostly because I wanted an A in the class. I wasn't sure about the convent because I knew I'd have trouble with the obedience part, so my next idea was I'd become a leper. "Lepers," the nun said, "suffered like Jesus, and sometimes they even lost parts of their bodies to the disease. For instance, their noses would fall off. But who cares? They'd go right to heaven. Plus, how could my father be mean enough to yell at me if I had leprosy?" The only problem was, it was hard to catch leprosy in Buffalo. There I was, just getting used to myself without a nose, when I realized I'd have to go back to the nun idea. Unless I could be a saint. Saints are really big in Catholicism. And not any old saint, just the ones who suffered really bad. In fact, we weren't that interested in the saint's life. I knew that my patron saint was Saint Teresa, who when she died let red roses fall down from heaven. Mostly, we were interested in the saint's gruesome deaths. One of my favorites was Saint Sebastian, who was tied to a tree and then 36 people shot arrows at his chest. He wasn't the same after that. Another in the Hall of Fame was St. Lucy, who met up with someone who didn't like her, and he actually tore her eyes out, and then she carried them around on a dinner plate. St. Elmo, as it turned out, also had one bad day when he was on a boat, and for some reason he wasn't popular either. The other people on the boat hooked a huge winch into his stomach, and then they turned the crank and reeled in the rope until his intestines came out onto the deck. But all wasn't lost. He became the patron saint of appendicitis. These were my role models.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks for indulging me there and reading a part of that essay, which I edited for doing on the air. So which saint did you attach to or want to become the most?
Well, I suppose St. Teresa. I like the red roses part, that she came, you know, let fall down from heaven. But the thing is, I didn't want to suffer as much as the saints. Like, I wanted to be one, but I wanted to sort of bypass the suffering part.
Don't you think that's true of all of us?
It's probably true, yes.
And I, of course, was raised a Protestant, and I was always jealous of you little Catholic girls because you had that, you know, that amazing thing called confirmation, where you got the white dress that looked like a bridal gown, and you
exactly.
got a cool little, I thought it was a necklace, I think it was a rosary, and, you know, you got to march down the aisle in the church. I, you know, really was jealous of that. I wanted to become Catholic.
Well, that's a good reason. The thing is, being Catholic, you have to, it's kind of mandatory, you have 25 years of therapy afterwards. That's the only problem. And by the way, on the cover of my book is St. Lucy with her eyes on a plate, which my family was not crazy about. But she's carrying them around on a dinner plate, so it's kind of quaint.
Yeah, well, the book, I want to make sure everybody understands the book is not just about your Catholic upbringing, but
right.
it talks about a lot of other things. One of the things, one of the essays is about your mother and her Alzheimer's disease. Tell the listeners
right.
about that.
Well, she's 95 and a half. I just saw her last week, and I try to see her three or four times a year. It's hard. She's not doing so well now. But she's very, I mean, she's still funny. She still says funny things, and we sort of try to just appreciate the moments we have with her. I just put my cheek against hers and try to be with her just like person to person, even if she doesn't know exactly who I am. But my mom, when I first met my husband, one of the things she said was, she went up to him and she said, "Can you get Terry back to the church?" And, of course, she'd never met him before. And so later I said, "Mom, he's Jewish." And so she called me up and she said, "I've been thinking about this. People can be Polish and Catholic. They can be Italian and Catholic. Why not Jewish and Catholic?" And I thought, okay, good work, Mom, but it didn't quite work out that way. Anyway, so she's so there is a story about her in there, just which I wrote a few years ago. So now she's even past some of the things I talk about in there. It's tough. It's tough to have a mom with Alzheimer's. It's tough to have anyone with Alzheimer's. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But in some ways, like she would never let me really touch her face or hug her very much when she was younger, and now she lets me. And one time she said to me, not too many years ago, something she'd never said when I was a kid, which was, "You are my darling girl." And so there are some things about Alzheimer's that are, it's about letting go. And I think that's what happened with her. She was always she always worried a lot about things, and now she doesn't worry anymore.
Right.
She's
yeah,
just it's present in the moment.
It is interesting. I actually was talking about dementia on the program last week, and it is funny how people change with Alzheimer's, but sometimes those changes are very sweet or very interesting,
right.
or a part of their personality or a new part of them comes forward that you haven't seen before.
Exactly.
And it sounds like that was the case with your mom. And in the essay you wrote about her, you really did focus very much on the positive things
right.
that you found in that. And that just that thing that she was able to say to you and to allow you to be physically close to her in a way that she wasn't before, for whatever reason, you know, is a real gift.
She was shy, I think.
Uh-huh.
And in her generation, people didn't really hug that much. And so on. So
yeah.
It is a gift whenever I can be close to her.
But that essay is also funny, Terry, and I want to ask you, where does that humor come from? You see everything from a humorous perspective, or at least it seems so. If you read this book, and as long as I've known you, I've never heard you, you know, get on your pity pot and feel sorry for yourself without, you know, coming up with a zinger at the end. Where does that come from?
Therapy. Drugs. No, just kidding. Well, I think everyone in my family is really funny. My dad was really comical, and I talk about him some in the book, too, and he just had that in him. And for me, I think even when I go through situations, sometimes, for example, with my mom, that aren't really funny, there's a part of my brain that is standing at a distance and saying, this is going to be funny later,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not funny that moment. Later on, I start writing about it. Writing is a great gift, and I love teaching writing. Mm-hmm. And I have a few spaces in my class, too, if people are still interested. English 120 over at the Community College.
And what's it called?
English 120. It's called Exploring Creative Writing.
Uh-huh. And what do you do in that class? We're taking a little detour here into your class.
Yeah.
What do you do? What kind of writing do you do?
I teach a lot of memoir and we do some fiction also. We also sometimes veer into poetry a bit. It's kind of what people in the class are interested in, but we start off with memoir, writing about what you know, and we use Natalie Goldberg's approach, the
writing down the bones,
just go for 10 minutes without stopping, and it's a very fun class. I love teaching it.
You've been teaching it a long time, haven't you?
I have, yeah, many, many years, and been at the community college 21 years, so I've been teaching it almost that long.
And you also taught for a long time at the Santa Fe County Jail, right?
Right, and that's a story in the book, too. And I volunteered there for 7 years, and that was just a gift, that experience.
You went, and well, tell the listeners about how that worked. You went once a week, or?
Went once a week, sometimes every other week, and I taught the women creative writing. And I thought if anyone needed to learn writing, they did. They had a million stories, and they just, it was so wonderful to see them sort of transform the pain in their lives to some kind of a story about themselves. And I had taught in other jails, too. I was an artist in residence with the New Mexico Arts Division for a year, and I was under Judith Hill. And went to different jails, including Fort Stanton in New Mexico. And that was such an experience. It was wild, actually. And so I created some little books of the women's writing, and so I would read them at the Santa Fe County Jail. And the women of all the writing, I would read to them Sandra Cisneros, the House on Mango Street. But the ones they liked the best were other women who had been incarcerated. They just loved those stories, and then I would give them a topic, and they would write for 10 minutes, and then they would read the writing. Uh-huh. And it was beautiful, actually.
And good for their self-esteem.
Absolutely.
To be able to express themselves, and then to have feedback about that expression of themselves from their peers and from you know, an expert, so to speak, in writing. I want to go back to your book. I'm talking with Terry Wilson, author of a new book called The Confessions of a Failed Saint. She's going to be reading from her work at 6 p.m. Friday at Collected Works downtown. You just went home. Where's home? Buffalo?
Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York, to visit your mom and your family. Tell me about the responses of your siblings and other family members to the book, because you talk a lot of very intimate details of your childhood are in there.
Right. It was quite an adventure. I went with my husband, and we were there for 8 days and just got back a few days ago. And a few of my siblings have read the book. Just one spoke to me about it, really, and one said she wants to. Two of them won't be reading it, they said. They feel it's too upsetting for them to read about my dad's drinking and so on. But, of course, there's a lot of humor in the book, and a lot of it's about stories of me in Santa Fe and meeting my husband and that kind of stuff, teaching at the jail and saving animals here and so on. But anyway, my family... they weren't crazy about the fact that I was telling some family secrets, and I didn't even tell the really good ones. I just told the ones that...
The minor ones that weren't such big secrets after all.
Exactly, right. But I felt really strong in the fact that I felt more myself than I ever had with them, in a way, because I told my truth, and I'm really proud of that. And my one brother said that he had trouble. Well, he wasn't crazy about the fact. He thought I was too hard on my dad about the drinking, but I really just told what my experience was growing up with someone who drank. And but then I asked him the question my therapist had told me to ask, which is, what was your experience with dad? And he said, dad never liked me. And so we had a whole discussion, which was kind of a miracle, in a way. It was kind of a miracle. And we just talked and talked. And he told me things he had never told me before.
Amazing. There's so many, in a home where there's alcoholism, there's often so much shame about that.
Exactly.
And there is sometimes very overtly, one is told, we don't talk about things outside this family, or everything is a secret. The child grows up believing everything is a secret and everything is somehow shameful, because it wouldn't be a secret, right?
Right.
If it wasn't shameful. And so, you know, those kinds of responses, even as adults, we have those kinds of responses when someone, you in this case, is talking about those shameful secret things.
Right.
You know, even though everyone knew anyway, you know, I'm sure the neighbors probably knew, you know, and that kind of thing. But it's a valuable lesson that you learned in being able to talk to him about it, even though he didn't like what you'd written about your dad and didn't agree with it.
Well, he drinks also, so he thought, of course, that I was too hard on my dad about drinking. But I've been in Al-Anon for years, and one of the things they always say in the 12-step programs is you're as sick as your secrets. And so for me to just tell this secret, it was just amazing. And everyone in the family, I think, deep down knows that, of course, it's true. And it's shameful, you know, as you said, to them to talk about it. But for me, it's just like I love my dad desperately. I mean, I loved him so much. And I think I also communicate that in the book. Like I said, he was very funny and just the life of every party. But he had a disease. And so I think just to acknowledge that is not a shameful thing. It's just being honest. And I could not talk about my life without mentioning that.
Right. Yeah. How did you become a writer? I don't know the front end of your story.
Well, one of the things, I mean, I'm also, of course, as you mentioned, a performer. I did a one-woman show 7 or 8 years ago at El Museo. And as you said, I've done some stand-up comedy. And when I was growing up, we had to stand in front of the refrigerator and perform. The refrigerator was like somehow
the backdrop
stage.
Or something.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so we had to perform, do impersonations of Jimmy Durante and John F. Kennedy and Alfred Hitchcock. That was the one I did. That was really, it was very bad. I was very bad at it. But so telling stories, as I said, and entertaining was a big deal in my family. So I think I started off like writing poems to different family members. And then just became, I don't know, writing to express myself. And then I got into the Natalie Goldberg approach, of course, the writing down the bones, the writing for 10 minutes and so on, and then have taught writing. So it's been probably 20 years I've been being a writer. Probably longer, actually.
I want to ask you to read one other, it's just an excerpt from one of your essays. This is about when Butch, your cat, got sick.
Oh, yeah.
And you reached out for help, and if you'll just pick up where the arrow is.
Okay. Later that night, I called Silent Unity, the prayer people. An older woman answered the phone. How may we pray with you this evening? She asked. I started to cry right away. My little cat is in the hospital, I sobbed. I'm sorry, dear. What's the cat's name? She asked. Butch, I said. And my mom is sick, too, because she's almost 90, and the cat reminds me of her because... What did you say the cat's name was? We didn't quite hear you. Butch, I said again, wondering who else was listening in on the call. She started to pray. Lord, we affirm that Butch is healed and that all his cells will feel God's healing light. Butch is a she, I said. A female cat named Butch? Yes, she has a goatee, but she's female, and she's always acted a little tough, so I named her Butch. I see, said the old woman. She's not really gay, she's just feisty, I said. Not that I wouldn't love her if she was gay. Your mother is gay? No, she's just feisty. So is Butch. Neither one is gay, that I know of. Let's get on with the praying, she said. One evening, about 8 months after this, I was trying to meditate in my office at home, lying on the old tan rug. I thought maybe I could lie still because I wasn't just meditating, I was accomplishing something else. And that particular evening, I lay there with my traction device pulling my neck out away from my head, a contraption I'd gotten from a physical therapist because I have a herniated disc in my neck. The small steel grips dug into my scalp, and I tried to find a comfortable position on the floor, and then closed my eyes. I took a deep breath. If I could drift off, I could ultimately make my neck feel better, plus contemplate at the same time. Suddenly, I felt the pressure of small paws climb onto my chest. I opened my eyes to see Butch looking right into my eyes. She carefully positioned her skinny body right below my neck and continued to stare at me. I knew she was possibly dying, and the vet could not do much for her ailing kidneys anymore. I began to cry. I lay there sniffling, but she gazed at me calmly. I don't know what cats think, and I don't know if she meant to communicate with me that day, but I felt her saying, "Don't worry, it's okay. You're going to be fine. Even if I die, I'm still here with you, right above your heart."
Thanks, Terry. That was an excerpt from Terry Wilson's new book, Confessions of a Failed Saint. She's going to be reading from that book at 6 p.m. Friday at Collected Works downtown. So, this is out. What are you working on now?
Well, I've written a lot of pieces about aging, which it turns out isn't always funny. So, but anyway, all my pieces are kind of bittersweet. So I may be doing another show called New Aging. And so, about New Age stuff in Santa Fe, but also about aging and some of the stories that go with that. And I have, like I said, I've been doing a lot of writing on it, so it may be a book, it may be a show. I haven't quite decided yet, but that's my next project.
Or maybe both.
Or maybe both. Or maybe you both, never know.
Yeah, and I want to mention again that you're teaching creative writing again this fall at Santa Fe Community College. It's English 120, is that right?
Right, exploring creative writing, and it's in the evening, Wednesday evenings from 6 to 8:45.
That's great. Everybody can go in the evenings, even people who have jobs. I want to remind everybody out there, I've been talking with Terry Wilson, author of Confessions of a Failed Saint. She's going to be reading from her book at 6 p.m. Friday at Collected Works downtown.
Can I say one thing? My book's available on Amazon and at all bookstores in town.
Great. And we're having the KSFR Book and Music Sale this weekend, August 2nd and 3rd, Friday and Saturday, at Santa Fe Community College Fitness Center, Friday from 1 to 6, Saturday 9 to noon, and 1 to 3. If you come at the very end from 1 to 3, there's a bag sale, so you can really make some deals. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Hollis Walker. I've been sitting in for Mary Charlotte.